recognized early on that we were going to have a challenge, as do most agencies, when it comes to the acquisition community. Skilled contracting officers, acquisition specialists are in short supply. So we realized early on that planning and working with the acquisition workforce and the medical centers and VBA and other facilities out in the system was going to be key to pulling this off. So what we did is we very early organized weekly meetings with all the key stakeholders, with the acquisition community to really lay out and plan the work, as well as leverage technology. We used our brand new contract writing system or acquisition management system, since it has a lot of management capabilities, to kind of really track this to the nth degree to make sure that, you know, we kind of plan the work and work the plan, especially since it was what we considered in addition to our everyday acquisition levels of work. So that was kind of it in a nutshell, strong planning and strong oversight and execution.
Now, before we get into the different areas that are going to benefit from these funds, I wanted to ask you a simple best practices question, and that is, you started early and you clearly had a plan and you followed the plan and you were able to wrap up the use of those Recovery Act funds. If there are any agencies out there now that are still sort of struggling, kind of behind the eight ball to meet their goals and their deadlines, would you have any advice for them, or is it too late at this point?
I believe it's a little late in the game. One of the key reasons we wanted to stop or complete the acquisitions, the obligations, by the end of July was the fact that the acquisitions sometimes you can have things like protests. Sometimes you'll have slippage in the award as you do negotiations. So you had to almost finish early to ensure that you could fully obligate it by September 30th. And if you look to obligate everything on September 30th and you had some noise in the system like, negotiations weren't going well or somebody pulled out or you had a protest of some sort or another, that you did not allow yourself any recovery time before those funds had to be obligated.
I want to hit some of the highlights that VA is using these funds for. The most obvious one, healthcare services enhanced. Tell me a bit about the funds that are used for that and what people will be seeing.
VA received $1 billion for what we call it non-recurring maintenance, but they're the type of things that will improve. As the secretary said when he originally tasked us to find projects or define projects to spend this money on, patient safety, efficiency of those medical centers, improve the patient safety, improve the efficiency of the medical centers, or improve the energy efficiency or what we call the greening of that medical center. And in some cases, you can do both. Energy efficient lighting, for instance, can improve the lighting, improve the safety of that facility, as well as green the facility, meaning, you know, use less kilowatts, make it a more efficient facility. So those are the kind of three mantras that we had. Improve patient safety with these expenditures, improve the energy efficiency or the energy profile of those facilities, and, if it makes for a more effective environment to do surgeries, run the pharmacy, look at those type of operational improvements as well when designing projects and selecting projects for these ERA funds.
You touched on energy conservation. It seems like a really important part of this, and it's not something that somebody would normally expect. When you talk about the VA spending this influx of money, the average person wouldn't immediately go straight to energy conservation. Why is that so important?
Well, VA facilities, many of them are very aged. And also hospitals, all hospitals tend to be very energy intensive. So energy is a big deal. A lot of these boilers and plant systems in these medical centers are easily over 50 years old. So it is not unusual to, when you have these kind of funds and you can make dramatic improvements in the energy efficiency of these facilities, it only makes sense. You know, if you can improve the heating and cooling and infrastructure of these facilities, not only does it save money going forward, But in many cases, it makes for a healthier environment in that particular facility. You know, the heating is better, the cooling of the building is better. It's just a more efficient, less energy intensive facility, which pays dividends down the road.
Something else that came up was the national cemeteries. They're being revitalized, but that also dovetails into with the energy conservation. Something that just caught my eye is that there are two national cemeteries you guys handle that believe they'll be able to produce enough electricity to supply their own energy needs. And my first thought is, what? A cemetery can do that? How?
Well, there's a windmill project in Bourne, Massachusetts, which is very interesting in that, you know, they get enough wind there. They did the feasibility studies and that they can use the, you know, the free wind power to generate the entire facility's electrical needs. And we think that's really neat. And they have the real estate. And we just find that to be just great. I mean, exactly the type of thing that we're feasible we ought to do. Kind of lead by example and do the right thing for the environment, as well as save future kilowatts, save future energy from other sources.